This is We Are What We Overcome. What you're about to hear are the ramblings and reflections of three ordinary people, drawing on their own personal and occasionally professional experiences. These conversations are unprepared, subjective, and should not be taken as medical advice or instruction. Anyone seeking help should always carry out their own research, or better yet, speak to a professional about their circumstances.
Giblets.
We Are What We Overcome on this occasion features musician Matt McGuinness, improviser Nick Tyler, and psychotherapist Wes Evans. Sit back, enjoy, and remember, it's good to talk.
The group may arrive late, that's fine.
I'm
going
to put out a couple extra chairs just at the back, just for anyone who...
He's optimistic,
surely, in the recording, we want the sound of chairs being dragged across a wooden floor. It's the authentic experience of doing something in a pub room. That's perfectly fine. All right, in that case, I guess we are live for episode 4.
Introductions first, I think, isn't it?
Introductions make sense.
So I think it should be Wes should go first this time.
Oh, okay. That's me then. I'm Wes. Nice to see you all. This is the biggest audience we've had so far in this podcast history of 4 episodes. So my name's Wes. I'm from Lancashire. So travelled a couple of hours to get here today. I'm a psychotherapist, but I'm also a pretend musician. And I was asked to get involved with this podcast as it's about mental health. So I'm bringing some of my experiences as a psychotherapist, but they're just that, they're experiences, my individual experiences, but some of my personal experiences as well. And I'm happy to be here on this lovely day.
So I'm Matt, and I'm a musician and a pretend psychotherapist.
Oh, I like it.
It's dangerous, that, isn't it?
Yeah. We didn't set that up, I promise you.
No. And that's about all we need to know from me, I think, for now. I think we should move on quickly after that.
Okay, fine. Well, hi, I'm Nick. I live in Nottingham. I'm an improviser here. I work in publishing and have plenty of personal health experience of mental health. Hooray. Which is useful for doing this. And it was also dragged in by Matt. And between us, this is the We Are What We Overcome podcast, which has grown out of a live show that Matt started doing at Edinburgh last year and is now a sort of live music and conversation and talking at the audience about his life, which is lovely and a very good show.
Thank you.
It is very good. Well done.
It is a good show. I've been to see it.
So what we sorry, should we move on before you're read? So what we did, it was looking at different topics each time to talk about. So last time we did suicide, which is great, and that went down really well. Well, after 10 minutes or so, it was all right, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Almost all these topics involve some anxiety in advance. They're all mental health topics seem to be things that we feel like we can get right and wrong, despite everyone having a very different experience. But I think we've all been conscious, same when we're talking about suicide, that we didn't want to say anything particularly awful, or give the wrong impression about how we felt. It was, I thought, a hard episode to record.
I really found it difficult.
I enjoyed it afterwards once we were finished, but I found it quite hard to do and to talk about.
But today we were. Do you want to explain what we were going to talk about today?
Okay, yeah. So we tend to have little chats over Messenger before each podcast and agreeing what the topic was, and it seems that we're chatting less and less each time about it. And I'm not even sure where this topic suggestion came from, because we had a few ideas. It was around gender and sexuality issues or bereavement, and then somehow we landed on how your own mental health can affect the other people around you. That's what we've settled on. I'm not quite sure where that came from, actually.
I'm not sure. Maybe it was implied by all the other ones. All the other ones also have that effect.
Right. But that's what we've landed on. So that's what we're going to speak about today. So it's fair to say we haven't really prepared or planned anything. And we haven't on previous episodes, actually. We've just had a rough idea of, it might be good to bring this in. That's very relevant to this topic, or this or that. But we haven't discussed this at all. And given that today we've got a lovely audience, we're going to have to allow time for questions and any directions it could take. So perhaps that's a really good thing.
Yeah, I think it gives us some flexibility. What we talked about doing on previous podcasts is kind of having like an emotional check-in at the beginning for each of us, which we think is a good idea for people generally, to sort of say how you're feeling about stuff in advance of doing the podcast itself, but also where we are in life generally. We're all on different places in, I don't know, whatever weird mountain range emotions represent. And we're all in different places for each podcast, and it colours and flavours what we're prepared to talk about and how we feel about what we're talking about as well. Yeah, I guess I'm going first.
Guess you are. Yeah.
Good. You were looking at me like I probably was. I'm in quite a good place currently. I've had some ups and downs. I experience depression, anxiety in a general way on a kind of daily basis. And I have days where I'm up and when I'm down, days when I don't really want to do anything. I just want to go and find knives in the kitchen drawers. Those are good days. Those are exciting days. And I find resisting that is take an enormous amount of energy and leave me kind of wiped out. But I don't know if it's the sunshine has brightened me up this week or I've had a nice week at work. But I feel pretty chipper and upbeat at the moment, and I'm enjoying that. And I'm looking forward to talking about how mental health affects people around us, since I clearly do that to my other half and the people that I love and spend time with.
That's glad to hear you're at. In a good place.
Hmm.
So I'm also in a good place. This could be really boring if we're in a good place.
I mean, that just sucks, doesn't it? What a terrible example.
Mental health is overrated.
I tried to give Matt a little bit of abuse before we started, just to address the balance, but
he's been very resistant. Yeah,
didn't seem to have worked.
I seem to be more and more these days talking with people about mental health every day. And like last week, I've talked to lots of different people. I think that's because of this and because of the other shows I've done and because I keep blabbing on about it. And it's a bit weird, actually. It still feels a bit selfish because when people talk to me about it and I get to talk to them about it, I actually come out of it feeling better, which does feel a bit unfair. But I've talked to a lot of people this week about mental health and I feel great. I mean, you know, I think it's partly because quite a few of them were fairly positive. But also I felt quite good the fact that they wanted to talk as well. I think that's probably why.
Yeah, that's paying off. That's a good thing.
So I'm all right.
Sweet.
Glad to hear it. I'm feeling like I should be in a bad mood or something to balance this out, but actually I'm in a pretty good place myself. Going on holiday at the end of this month, which I'm looking forward to. And happy about the sunshine. I'm in a good place too.
Oh, hooray for us. That's great. Yeah. How's our audience generally? And I'm not sure if we can make I almost want it to be represented like in a noise, some kind of sort of waveform. without really wanting to put it on the spot. I don't know. Maybe we could like have a show of hands if you feel like you're in a good place right now. Okay, that's not too bad. And we can sort of, I guess we can infer from that that people who have not raised their hands are not in such a good place.
In a very good place.
Oh, all right. Okay, right, all right.
Or everything all right. In between.
Right, well, let's test that, right? If you're in a very good place, stick your hand in the air. Nice, we got one. Well, that's very cool.
This is like a poorly designed research project just playing itself out. Actually, that wasn't the best question to ask. Let's try again. Maybe do an impression of a dolphin if you're feeling happy.
I would welcome that. That would be great. Yeah, if you want to do a dolphin noise, that's ace. Cool. Well, I think it gives us some idea of how the room feels. I don't know whether that's an indication of the summery weather. I know that has some effect for some people.
So,
The topic.
The topic.
What was your first kind of thinking when we decided that this was the topic we're going to be doing? What sprung to mind? Oh, that reminds me of this, or makes me think of this.
It made me think that when I'm down, I am not a lot of fun to live with, and that's not great. And that's a kind of a sort of reinforcing cycle as well. If I'm aware that I'm making my other half feel kind of miserable, or I feel like I'm making her feel miserable, which I may not exactly be, then that also makes me feel bad about then doing that. And so that just reinforces itself over and over into a cycle. But yeah, I know that if I'm particularly down, I find it very hard to articulate anything about it. Despite our many conversations about the importance of talking about mental health, if I'm properly down, there's nothing coming out and I'm just clammed up and tense and silent in not just about how I feel, but everything. I find it very hard to speak about any topic at all.
What do you think makes it difficult for the people around you?
I think it makes it hard to know what's actually going on.
So that you're so clammed up, that's what's difficult for people around you, is it?
Yeah, I think for my part, yeah, you got to live with that and try and interpret that in a useful way that you can. Yeah, you'd wish to do something about it. Presumably, I'm putting all kinds of things on my partner, assuming that she would wish to help, which I think she does, but I can't pretend to be inside her mind either. And I think if you're not speaking, no one else can get inside and know what you're doing and how you feel. So they also can't go, can I do anything for you that will help? Because you're like, I'm not going to talk to you, whether it's good or bad. And I think that's very frustrating.
So that's not what I imagined, actually. Mm. When you said, if I'm not feeling too good, I'm difficult to be around, I guess my head went straight to that, maybe I become grouchy or snappy, or maybe I become really needy, or, you know, whatever, something like that. But what you're saying is that you clam right up, and it's that causes the difficulty for people around you.
Yeah, I think so, because I become not present, you know. I'm not involved and not really wanting to contribute to a discussion of what shall we have for tea. You know, even trivial things, which I think is the ridiculous aspect of that.
That makes sense. Matt, what popped into your mind for this topic?
Quite a few things. One is one of the people I spoke to this week, and she was chatting about how her son felt. And I was trying to explain to her that when you're in a certain place with mental health, it isn't so much about not wanting to talk to somebody else or not wanting to do the right thing or not wanting to show some respect or whatever. You just don't really think of any of that stuff. You know, you're in a place where it's not, and it's difficult to hear it. It's not that they are irrelevant, but they are as good as in that moment, aren't they? It's nothing to do with them in some senses, and it's not a reflection on them. They are just a completely different issue. And I think that's really hard to take on board. I find it really difficult with people who are close to me or aren't in a great place, even though I try to think a thing like this quite a lot, that I can't help them. It's just difficult to take on.
Because there's that idea that you should be able to help.
Well,
yeah, because you want to help, which is nice and perfectly reasonable. But
it's just naff thinking that you're only there for the good times. You know what I mean? It's like. I always remember a close family relative and another close family relative, and she was complaining about how her partner was very ill, and my this other relative, he said, you know that bit when he got married and said, for better or worse, well, this is the worst bit, you know.
Aww.
And that, do you know what I mean? That's it always stuck with me that's. And I think that's as important, if not equally as important, as the good bit. And when you can't actually fulfill that, I don't know whether you feel a bit inadequate yourself or you're annoyed or what, but I always think I can do more. And when you can't do anything, it's quite hard.
So you were talking about how it might be for people around you when you're not so good, I'm assuming. So the first stuff you were talking about was... sounded like I was going to ask, is that a personal experience? You know, when you're saying that people are just separate and almost insignificant at that time when you're feeling crappy, you know, because
I mean, when I the worst point I had when I felt like I wasn't too sure whether this was going to carry on anymore and suicide was the only thing in my head, I had no interest in anybody else. You know, it wasn't no interest, they didn't exist. It was just, you know, and I think that's the hard thing to try and get.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to check out then. So if that was you speaking for you when you were in that place, you know, because I'm sure it's not the same for everybody.
Mm.
But then you start speaking about how you feel if someone around you is not so good.
Yeah.
Feeling unable to help.
Well, you know, that's what you should be there for.
I always challenge shoulds. I love shoulds. So whenever there's you should or I should, I think, well, should you? Should I?
Yes.
Yeah, that settles that.
Alrighty then.
Thank you. I can write that down as I've got the answer to that question.
How about you?
You're the first person to ever answer that question. For me, I was thinking about some of that kind of stuff, like how one might be if they're struggling and the different ways that might affect people around them. So whether it is that they put that stuff out in some kind of form, whether it be they're angry or frustrated or, you know, in despair and avert about it, but maybe that they shut down and that kind of stuff. So similar to you guys. But I was also thinking about the flip side of how Has anybody heard that kind of expression that people can be drains or radiators? Have you heard that? So that we can give out and put out, or we can suck in and take everything from around us. I was thinking about that kind of thing and how it could probably go a couple of ways, you know. So if I'm feeling positive or in a good place, how that might impact the people around me as well.
You're so right, because we keep talking only about mental health, and it's an endless thing, isn't it?
Well,
we only talk about the bad.
One's mental health can be good, bad, and everything in between, can't it?
Yep.
So your mental health and how it impacts those around you, I think we have to look at the whole scale there. I don't even like saying good and bad, really. I think our mental health is something that is variable, and something to have good mental health is ultimately it's maintained, you know.
We need better terms for that, definitely.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, back to the kind of idea of the topic, I just think that how are our emotional states or our mood or how we're feeling in general, how that can affect the people around us positively and negatively. I know that sometimes I'll go home and I'm told it's quite noticeable if I'm feeling a bit stressed or worn down or like I've had a heavy day. And I'm oblivious. I think that, you know, I don't think I'm acting any differently, you know.
Is that because of the contrast with whatever your kind of resting state is? I feel like we all have, I don't know what to call it, like a natural level when we're not adversely affected in either direction, either too, I don't know, hyper or depressed. There's like a middle range that we'd consider to be us.
Like our resting state or
something. Yeah, that other people are plainly able to recognize, especially people that we're very close to, and then can tell, like, oh, you've had a terrible day, or you're a bit manic today. And you know, the other people can tell more easily than we can, perhaps because a lot of our mental health is manifest in behavior that we exhibit towards each other. Whereas both me and Matt have kind of suggested, when we're shutting down, we're not aware of how we're behaving either, because none of it matters anymore. I get what you mean, Matt. It's like a bubble. Nothing outside your little bubble. So you're not even thinking that other people would be able to recognize your mental health state, I guess.
And then, and I agree with that. But I was thinking about it from like a work perspective as well. Mm. And I was thinking the amount of clients that come and see me, and a lot of the times at this initial consultation that I'll offer, it's a partner or a family member that is kind of bringing them along. Mm. And maybe they're the spokesperson first. And it's kind of them that's saying, I just really want him to get some support. Or I just think it'd be really great if she talks to someone. And I think, well, that's born out of the impact on that person, isn't it? Mm. And we've touched upon this, that maybe they've been the ones to kind of prompt the support in the first instance. And that's what we're talking about, isn't it? The impact of how someone is on those around them.
It's true, because you may think of the positive side, like the good mental health. So I think my bad mental health is being when I'm sort of depressed or anxious. But when I'm very happy, I'm quite manic and frantic and get very excited and start doing 100 different things.
And it sounds really annoying, actually.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, that's what I was going to say. It's super annoying.
You know, just talking about the impact on other people.
Yeah, drives my other half crazy because I'll be, let's go and do a thing. All right, I'm going to do a whole lot of things on my computer. I'm going to get some books out. I'm going to start unpacking this box of things, going through those, and say, ooh, what's that? Oh, I could reorganize these things. And so, yeah, there's
please,
a bunch of drawers
stop.
That open,
please stop.
Empty
stop.
Of things.
Stop.
And I,
where is she? I want to give her a pity hug.
I think she's given up. She's going to leave the empty chair for us. He's like, nope, I don't
We should just take a picture of her right now and then just put that on the podcast Facebook page. This represents the impact of my mental health.
Just like going, nope. Yep. Yes, I think that's equally irritating.
The other thing from the work perspective was, again, you know, occasionally I will bring in little bits of insights or thoughts related to some of the work that I do. None of it's advice or anything like that, but it's insight. Like, Couples will come to see me for a consultation, and quite often the first thing we have to figure out is this an issue for you guys as a couple? Mm. And does this mean that we're going to do couples work? Or actually, is it that one of you is struggling with something and the other person is really struggling as a result of that? Because that's quite different, actually. That's not a me and you issue. It's a me issue that's affecting you, if that makes sense. So numerous times we've had a couple come for a consultation, and in the end what we've decided is that one person just needs to get support with a problem they're having or an issue they're facing or something they can't get past or whatever. So it turns out to be an individual thing. And the reason they came as a couple was because the partner was just kind of going around the bend trying to cope with it or the aftermath of it.
And that makes sense, because if you're in a couple, then it feels like your automatic support is your other half, which is quite a lot of extra support to give. That can be a lot more than that, you know, your good times and bad times. That can be a lot more significant than you're really capable of providing. That's, you know, you do this stuff professionally, you know, and oftentimes professional guidance is required. That's more than individuals can often provide from within themselves and offer, but I think we feel like we're obliged to. That's the job you've taken on. You know, you get the kiss and the cuddle, but you've also got to take all the grief and depression and all the other stuff alongside it. And maybe we don't. Maybe that's the should that you're talking about, that you should care for them, but you don't have to do it on your own. And you're definitely not required to do it on your own, even if that's how we feel, that, you know, they're not talking to anyone else. We're going to have to talk to them, but you can still find other support too.
So there's something in that then about partners or close family members of someone who is struggling, and that so the, a part of the impact on them is this strong sense of obligation. They feel that they have to do something or should be doing something, which is an interesting one, isn't it? Because that ultimately, one's well-being is their own responsibility, which mm-hmm. sounds like a really harsh thing to say, but it could be that the difficult thing for a partner or a family member is to realize there's only so much I can do, and actually this person has their own autonomy and choice. And
it's also being careful that you don't and I do it too much, you put on other people about how you expect them to behave. So if like me and potentially, you really like to talk quite a lot.
yeah, you never shut up.
And everyone says, you know, it's that whole phrase, isn't it? It's good to talk and stuff. But there is a vast majority of people who would dispute that. You know, it's really bad to talk. It's, you know, that it isn't always the answer, you know. Mm. And
do you mean bad to talk or hard to talk?
Nope. No, I mean, I think there's quite a few people I know who aren't in a place that is a good thing for them. Mm-hmm. They just, you know, whether it's their more into actions and than words or whatever, but they're just not built like that. And I'm pushing someone down that road that's what the answer is not a good thing.
What do you think the answer is going to be for them instead? I mean, if it's not talk, what is it that's going to help them?
I think time helps them. I mean, I think there is obviously some. It isn't. I guess the thing with talk is it isn't like talk or silence. Is it? Do you know what I mean? There's a whole load of it. But I suppose it's the extent of the conversation, isn't it? Or the how often the conversation happens. You know, and a lot of it is maybe time and backing off. I mean, there's a guy who I spoke to 2 weeks ago, and we were just chatting, and I immediately got into a conversation with him about his mental health because he'd came to me and brought it up a few weeks earlier, and the look on his face was like, I wasn't expecting you to do that, you know.
To inquire about it.
Yeah, I was just checking in to see how he was, but just because he'd once gone into it with me, he didn't think that would sort of give me the permission to.
Yeah, well then he might not have wanted to talk about it. Which is what you're saying, isn't it? I get what you're saying, and it made me also think that actually, I agree. Maybe talking isn't always helpful. Straight away I thought of, you know, someone's been through a traumatic experience or something, you know, something really, you know, big like that. Actually, sometimes they might not be ready to talk it out, or it could be harmful to try and talk it out at that time. And I suppose there's helpful talk and unhelpful talk as well, isn't there? I could have a conversation with one person about something serious and it'd be really helpful, and a conversation with someone else and it'd just be really unhelpful. So perhaps it's, what do we mean by talk? I suppose we don't just mean talk, actually, do we, sometimes?
That sounds like we also partly mean, like, the capacity to talk. You know, when we're talking about suicide, we're talking about a lot about autonomy and stuff, but more about intervening in suicidal ideation and stuff is adding time so there's a greater range of possibilities that are available. Because I think, say, for me, I was thinking that suicide is the option when you've run out of all the other options, you can't see any other possibilities, and it is the next logical step down the road because there are no other options left. And inserting time into that creates the possibility for more opportunities to arise, for there to be a different option for that somewhere. And I think that it's a similar idea of capacity. You know, you have to reach a point where you have the capacity to speak. You know, where if I'm kind of locked in, then all I can do is wait until I'm ready to talk, because you can go, what's wrong with you? I know there's something wrong with you. Why aren't you talking to me? Still can't talk. It's still not getting to the point of talking. And yeah, being needled about it or trying to be kicked down that road doesn't help either. But I think it's just still waiting for the point at which talking is possible. You know, it's filling in the time until that is an option again. And by which time, hopefully, whatever it was that was bringing a person down has been left behind.
But even then, it might not be in the same way that you think a conversation is. Or, you know, it might be for them, you could wait forever and 2 minutes of conversation, that might be it. Do you know what I mean? It sounds stupid, but it's taken me a while to get my head around that because of the stuff I do, I quite happily talk about anything about mental health and not worry about it. But, you know, I keep getting reminded by a number of friends, people aren't necessarily like that.
You're not entirely normal, Matt. Good. You're an outlier, but in part because you believe that people ought to talk about this stuff. Yeah. And you're acting your intentions and beliefs out, which I think is a good thing. If other people sometimes find it challenging. But then they'll also be shown a different way by you doing that, which may turn out to be appealing later.
Another thing I was thinking about this topic of how one's own mental health will impact everything around them or people around them was how our mental health, well, not our, but how mental health affects society. Mm. Or how one's mental health can affect society. I suppose it would have to be a collective, you know, but that kind of thing. Mm. And so whether we get to talking about how mental health issues... affect resource and services and that kind of thing, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you're right. I can say in larger social groups than just in a couple. You know, I see it at work because there's only four or five of us in the office. So if one person's really down, you're right. That kind of sort of radiator drain idea is so noticeable, and you can almost see it as like colour being leached out of the room towards someone, and no one else can quite achieve the sort of chipper conversation that they want to and get stuff done because someone else is just unable to participate.
So like affecting the workplace kind of thing. Yeah,
I can say see that. And also, but the other way around too, you know, if you're really upbeat, then you can often to take other people with you to a certain extent. Mm. And that's nice. You know, and I've felt that when I've been kind of, yeah, whatever. And someone else has been really like, oh, great to see you. Amazing. What have you been doing? I've been doing all these things. I'm like, oh, okay. Maybe I do feel kind of better about this. And that almost pro-social modelling idea, someone else being very upbeat, sometimes has the possibility to carry other people with them.
Sometimes, not always. I was thinking as well, maybe beyond workplaces and things like that, but like, you know, like the NHS the benefit system or whatever, those bigger kind of systems as well.
Do you get many people coming to see you who aren't the actual person that wants to come and see you? Like,
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
How does that go?
So I've had people... who have come to see me to help them manage while someone else is really struggling. And so that's the way we've carried on. So let's say, for example, back then when it was as bad as it was, you came to see me, you know, our work would be about just you coping, actually. So yeah, I've had that happen. I've also had someone come to me first asking my advice, help, support about how they can encourage this person into support. But it really does come down to kind of that choice and
that's it. Is there much support for?
Well, support there's support if you're formerly been able to be classed as a carer. Oh. I'm sure there are quite a few charities, at least where I live, I know there are charities that are support people that are classed as carer. Now, of course, I think typically we're speaking about people with long-term health conditions or maybe physical conditions or disabilities and that kind of thing, but I'm pretty sure that extends to supporting someone through long-term mental illness. But maybe that's the difficulty. Maybe it's more difficult for them to be able to officially offer support for someone that might be going through a rough patch or a spell of you know, poor mental health.
Requires that categorization and classification and all that stuff.
Mm. And so, tend to find that maybe someone does just go and seek out some kind of support for themselves off their own back, whether it be going to the GP and just saying, I'm having a really rough time, And then as they talk a little bit more about it, you find out that this person's carrying so much on their shoulders because they're supporting their son or their partner or whatever it might be.
That makes sense to me. Certainly my partner and I have at different times in our relationship had to cajole and bully the other one into going to get support.
Yeah.
You know, you clearly need support. I can't give you the support that you need, but I want you to be okay.
Yeah.
You need to go and do this thing, but you can't do that until you're ready to make the choice to go and do it. But in the interim, you still got to do something, and you can't just be nudging every day, because that makes you go crazy as well, because you feel like you're just punching into a brick wall, and that's very frustrating.
I liked what you said, Earl, though, because earlier on there was a bit of a, well, maybe it's not always good to talk, and then it was kind of, well, what should they do instead, and all this kind of stuff. But actually what you just talked about there is just the practical support that we can offer. You know, I'll come round and walk your dog or whatever. I really like that. Just as an aside, that, you know, there are lots of ways in which we could be helpful to people, aren't there, and help lighten the load and that kind of thing.
Just go and get an ice cream out of the freezer.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Do you know, I went to see,
self-care is the words that are coming to mind, and I've probably mentioned it in every single episode, but self-care. So for those that are impacted by someone close to them, as much as you might be thinking, I really must try and help them and everything else, you really have to kind of take care of yourself as well. You can't pour from an empty cup, or whatever the expression is.
I went to see the great Nick Cage the other night, and he was talking about issues that had affected him with bereavement, and he said a really similar thing, actually.
I feel very pleased about that.
Yeah, no, he's really animated about it, actually. And he just said, you know, we don't need the empathy. We don't need someone to say, I understand how you feel, because you can't. You just need that practical, someone who's sort of to the side and slightly back, who's there to, you know, you need to know that they're there to do the practical things, or they're there when you need, when you reach out and stuff. It's the important thing is to know that they are there, not that they can sit there over a cup of tea and say, oh, it must be terrible. Do you know what I mean? You said it more eloquently than that.
Just to do normal things, but unfortunately, because of what's going on, people take a step back, and often it can lead to people being even more isolated, can't it? But yeah, just normal things. Just let's do what we normally do as well. I think that's really important.
Yeah, I like that. I think routine's very good. Even at our worst times, either half and I have maintained our very boring domestic routines of going and doing the food shopping on a Friday night. Nothing like Tesco and Sainsbury's at 7 o'clock in the evening on a Friday. It's the best time to go, and it's a really dumb, pointless, boring thing. But just having that, that's definitely going to happen every week, is surprisingly reassuring, and helps, even if it's just buying the same junk. There's always the Lego aisle for excitement, so that's fine.
Have you found people stepping away from you when you've been at the worst, or you've expressed it, or...?
I don't think so. I think I've been lucky in that, but I'm much more likely to step backwards from them. Right. If I'm in a bad place, I'm going to step away from everybody and I'll just vanish and
just shut down.
I have friends here who I know when I've been in their site, have stepped well away from and not gone out and not done things. But I can't think of anyone who's stepped back. I think I've been very lucky in that sense. I think that's probably unusual.
I wouldn't say I've had people step back, but I suppose I'm starting to think a little bit more about personal experience now as well. And I was thinking of two things. I was thinking of when I was trying to help a friend who was in a really, really rough place. So I was trying to think of what was that like for me, supporting him. But then I was also thinking about when I lost my gran. So like my first kind of big and proper bereavement, you know, the first loss that really kind of cut to the core. And I think people around me found it difficult to know what to do. And I think that's quite a cliche, typical thing, isn't it? I'm not sure what to do. I'm not sure to say the right thing, the wrong thing, what I should say, what I shouldn't say. And I do wonder, actually, if people just kind of stepped away from each other so as not to rock each other's boats. I think I've probably experienced that. Maybe not so much the stepping away from myself, but they're not saying much because I don't want to get it wrong.
I feel like we used to have proper social conventions for that, though, didn't we? We used to grieve formally. You know, we would all wear black for a year, and that was very. But that served. It seems weird now, but that served a whole bunch of useful functions.
Well,
identifies you. All these people are grieving, so you know that offhand, so you don't get the awkward conversation. Oh, how's your dad? Ah, nuts. Something that you've not seen very often, and it gets away. People know that you're in not a great place, so it cuts through some of that awkwardness a little bit.
Until it's laundry week and you've only got black t-shirts left. And
and they're all turning grey because you washed them too many times. Then you got to get a whole new wardrobe. You're not a proper goth anymore. Yeah. It's very complicated.
You sound like you're speaking from personal experiences again.
I've had to go for the emo pink now. There's no point with my black wardrobe. It's useless.
We should do bereavement for a topic, and I'm conscious of us drifting into just talking about bereavement, but I think you're right. There used to be kind of more heavy set traditions and kind of procedures around, you know, loss and death, and perhaps they're a bit blurred. But I also think it's true that the British are a bit rubbish at it as well, actually, compared to other countries maybe, or other cultures.
That's how we won two world wars, you know.
Yes, absolutely. You know, keep calm and carry on, stiffer Philip. Yeah, I think there definitely is a thing of people not knowing how to ask or what to say when something has happened. And perhaps that is a bit more generally transferable to if someone's just not okay as well. Not just death and loss. But if you know that your friend's having a rough old time of it, like, what do I say?
It's because we think there's a right thing to say. And there plainly isn't. Everything you can say is both...
I think you're right that we think there's a right thing to say.
Everything is both right and wrong. Yeah, that there is no formulation of words. That's why I know we endlessly talk about bereavement, because it's one that we've got the most codified stuff for. You know, I'm sorry for your loss, which is both meaningful and contentless, and is formal and personal. And I guess because we have that for some things, we feel like we ought to have them for other situations.
Maybe
too.
We should, you know. Like, maybe I'm sorry for your depression.
Yeah, because partly that is acknowledging it.
God, can you imagine someone that's saying to you?
That would be really good for Clintons and that kind of thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah. There'd
be a whole new range of
your anxious state.
Yes,
and
I'm fearful of your mental health.
Yeah, that would be a great card. Yeah. I'd love to get those.
I'm sorry, I would pop round and check in, but I'm scared of getting it wrong, so I sent a card instead.
My life is far too happy to be dealing with the likes of you.
Yeah, we really need to get some badges made up with these things. That'd be fine. Well, we have that now with t-shirts, don't we? We have t-shirts that say terrible things and nice things. I don't want to talk to anybody today. Yeah, potentially quite a useful thing. Maybe it's not really a joke t-shirt.
Maybe it's not.
It really isn't. And when if you see someone wearing that, you're like, oh, okie dokie. Thinking about my workmates very differently now.
I was sat in Halifax yesterday morning having a coffee, thinking about, I'd seen that, is that show about, program about Plastic World, or there's a six show. Yeah, that's it. And there was a piece in that from the bit I saw the night before where two young girls had gone to talk to McDonald's or Burger King about why they gave away those disgusting toys to everyone, and maybe they shouldn't do it. And
wait, which toys? McDonald's have done some amazing toys.
Yeah, whatever. So,
hey, don't deny the contents of my house.
So there's loads more in the sea if you want them. they basically gone to head office because they had no response from the letters, and the security guy basically threw them out, and or wouldn't let them in. And I was just thinking, he must have kids, you know, he must. And I was sitting there thinking about the mindset, wasn't it? You know, that I don't think I know anyone that would have had that response. But I don't know everybody. So, but he can't possibly, doesn't mean he's a bad person, does it? He's just coming from a different place, doing his job, and I don't know.
You don't know what place they were in. You know, it's a bit like when you meet any random stranger. The best assumption that you can make is that other people have a lot of stuff going on too. And so any interaction you have with someone, particularly someone that you don't know, who might seem a bit rude or a bit disengaged, you're like, well, you don't know what's just happened to them. They could have just had a car accident. All sorts of things could have happened to them, or they could just be who they are every single day. We can place so much on strangers and on people that we know that is wholly unjustified and is in fact informed by, I want to have a lovely experience here. Why aren't you all lovely to me all the time?
Again, that's quite relevant to the impact someone's state can have on us, isn't it? I'm conscious of time, and I think we're approaching wrap-up time. Is that right? Shall we wrap up with final comments, thoughts?
Yes. Can I go last? I can't think of what my final wrap-up is. I can't condense my brain into a sentence.
I'll go. Matt, I've really felt very engaged and energized by this conversation today. And like I just said, it seems to have developed into much a bigger topic than we perhaps had realized it was going to be. But we've spoken a lot about being on the receiving end of trying to support someone who's struggling and how difficult that can really be. And so I'm going to emphasize again this self-care stuff that I always seem to come back to. And challenge the shoulds, that's what I'm going to say. If you ever think I should or whatever, think, should I? Matt will tell you that you should. But I'll tell you that Matt's wrong. So that's me.
So I've been thinking about a lot recently is about the how, this is completely off subject here, but it's on my mind more and more over the last few weeks, but for a long time, is how the external environment affects people and how this whole thing with climate change and how people aren't dealing with it, how that affects people's mental health. And I think that's becoming, well, it is becoming more and more of an issue. I think that'd be quite good for us to talk going forward, actually.
Yeah, we briefly alluded to it earlier, but we didn't really get into it. I think you're right, absolutely. Like having an episode purely about how the outside affects us kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, and how that sort of, it's a whole mental health thing, is that, you know, you've got, there's an issue there, part of which you can't do absolutely anything about. It strikes me it's quite a sort of anomaly for actual mental health.
Yeah, I agree.
I think I remind again of what we were talking about earlier, the sort of impenetrability of other people's like mental health states that you can't get into, but you still feel like we're obliged to support. But that's leavened by knowing there are many kinds of support that we're not necessarily fixing. We're just often just being there, but being there within our capacity and recognizing that we have sometimes finite and limited capacities, and that we also need, in those cases where we are helping other people, we also need some other release. And even if that's just a chain of people helping each other, that's okay. As long as it's not in a circle, that's probably a problem. That would get kind of messy.
Well, we'd have to be in a circle because there'd be one person that just never got any support.
But maybe they're chill and they don't need it. Maybe there's someone out there who's just absolutely fine.
There's just like a Buddha at the top of the tree that is just fine.
Yeah.
I think Buddha had issues, you know.
Yeah. So. Maybe that's a topic.
If you find that person who's completely chill and fine, find them for us. They sound great. And I'm interested to talk to them. I think in conclusion, it's tough, but knowing that other people experience the same problems in both in helping and in trying to be helped, I think knowing that helps a little bit too.
That's what we want ultimately from this podcast, isn't it? Is to put this stuff out there for people to realise that maybe it's not just me and that we can talk about this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like we're about there. Mm. So, we've set up a Facebook page, which is amazing. I thought we should include it in the podcast somewhere.
I think I attempted at a bit of a plug earlier on. I mentioned
Because we have no other presence other than the podcast just being on various threads and things. So if you're interested or if you enjoyed attended to this in any way, if you want to find the Facebook group and like it, then we can post stuff in there that might be of general interest. I listen to a lot of mental health podcasts that I have no one really to share them with, and people would be annoyed because it's off topic. Maybe we'll find a use for that and stuff. But more importantly, I wanted to thank you guys for coming and listening and contributing and being part of this. It makes a difference to know that it makes a difference.
So that was the We Are What We Overcome podcast. That's the title of the Facebook page, yeah?
That is true. Yes, yes. We Are What We Overcome, the podcast. There might even be a hyphen in there, but I think Facebook algorithms ignore that if you use it in a search term.
Thanks very much, guys.
Cool. You done?
Fantastic.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Well, thank you. You have said hard things.
If you've been affected by anything we've talked about tonight, that's cool. We were kind of hoping you would be. If you haven't been affected by anything tonight, then that's great too. You're probably fine. Of course, if you say you're fine, then the chances are you aren't. So you might also have been affected. If you've been affected before, you probably will be again. Please talk to someone. It can get better, and together we can survive. We are what we overcome. And these poor little boys, grounded by the sun, pale by his side, but something strong.